crying shame. Talking fool, he will taste your blood. For talking fool, we'll leave you lying.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Talking Fool right here on BroadUpSeat.com. And I have a very interesting guest. I've been so excited to have this person on the show. And I'm sure you guys are going to really, really enjoy this conversation. I have none other than the famous, I'm not going to say infamous, just the famous Simeon Hall Jr. Now, when I say that name, let me put it in another way. Chef Simeon Hall Jr. I think that made it clear. It made it really, really clear. So how are you doing today, Mr. Hall? How's things going your way?
Hey, I'm. It's a beautiful day to be alive. I'm very excited to be on the show. I've been listening to some of your former guests before. Awesome. And just to be clear, you know, there are certain things about me that are infamous. And I'm also nowadays morphing into modern jazz as chef. So I'm slowly transitioning. I'm still loving that name, but still transitioning to even more than that.
Awesome. We're definitely going to talk about that. I want to know more about that, definitely. So let's just kick this off because I know this is going to be a while. This is going to be a good conversation. I know this is going to take a while. So I want to know about you, and I want everyone else to hear a little bit about you. So let's talk about you as a person, first of all. And the first thing I want to get off the top so everyone knows, I want you to answer this question. What convinced you to become a chef?
Well, you know, there's two stories there. When I was younger, I was influenced by both my grandmothers.
Okay.
And my grandmother, one was a chef at the Nassau Beach Hotel all of her life. And the other was the famous Nola from Nola's Bake Rob. One of the first businesses right there on Carmichael and Faith Avenue. Before Carmichael became the Carmichael that we know now, going to her store was literally going into the bush. And so I grew up, she lived with us for a very long time. And so that was definitely a huge influence when I was very young. I started cooking around the age of 4. Later on in life, I guess the not so popular reason is I wanted to get girls. Because somewhere along the line, I heard that girls like men that can cook.
They can cook.
So I did it to girls. I don't know which one of them works better. All these years later, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Okay, because you said something right there. You started cooking at the age of 4. So you grew up in that era where either your parents or your grandparents, they, boy, come here. I'm learning how to do this. Did it happen like that?
Yeah, for sure. Even my grandmother, you know, and my mom, they were working women, but they were also cooking women.
Right.
My dad cooked maybe 2 dishes. he's self famous for, but everything else I learned from the creativity of my mom and my grandmother. We lived with one, and one we would visit after school.
Right.
And the other grandmother, she had this famous Thursday baked bread. Mm. Every Thursday, she would gather the family together, and everybody would go by Grammy to pick up bread.
Right.
And so that was very, very important to us as a family. And it left a mark on me for the rest of my life because I understood from a very early age what it meant to bring family together and that food is fellowship.
Yeah, that is right. And that's famous bread. I think everybody had that, but I wouldn't say everybody because nowadays persons don't usually have that. But back in the day, we had that Grammy. He used to make that bread. And that bread was one thing you would sit around and wait until it's done. So was she, if she was anything like my grandmother, sure she was, they were the ones who never used measuring instruments. They just used their hand. Was she used that type?
Oh, yeah. No. You know, and looking back as we were older, we realized that there were some days that Grammy bread didn't rise to rank.
Right.
And then there were some days when it was perfect.
Yeah.
There were some days when it could have baked a little bit longer, and there's some days where it was probably a little bit too brown. However, it was Grammy's bread.
Yes.
So no matter what it came out like, the thought and again, the fellowship around it was what was most important. And you're absolutely right. I never, in all my years of studying and apprenticing behind my grandmother, who baked, I never remember seeing her use any measuring tools. My other grandmother, who owned a restaurant that was very, very famous and popular, I never saw her use measuring tools in her restaurant. But the food was always, always tasty and always very, very similar. Similar enough for it to the person who didn't work behind the scene to not even understand or be able to identify the nuances when it changed.
Exactly. That was something special. I still don't know how they do that. I tried it one time and that didn't work out. So I think they used to
It's time.
Yeah.
It's time.
It takes time to do that.
You got
to
do it over a period of time. And it's a sense of touch, a sense of smell, a sense of taste, a sense of hearing. You use all your senses.
Right.
When you Grammy cook. When you Grammy cook, you got to use all your senses.
I like that. Grammy
when you cook behind, using your training and your technical skills, then you really don't even need to do all that.
Right.
You use your measurement and you watch the time. And that's it. You don't need that. But there's something very special about the soul of Grammy cooking. I told somebody this just the other day. When last, or have you ever in your life had a bad dish from somebody who said, who had a story behind their food.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who could come and tell you and talk to you about their food and why they did it and how they did it and the reason they did it and the story behind it. You never have bad food like that. Never.
Right.
It's when you cook using your technical skills and the kind of structure that a lot of restaurants and stuff use these days. That's when you could have some off cooking.
Ah. So that emotion plays a big role. Like you say, that Grammy cooking, that's emotions in that. That's love. That's what they say. You put your
110%. 100%. 110%. I used to cook, I still am technically kind of sort of. I used to cook for Rita Marley.
Okay.
I'm sure everybody knows who that is. And I cooked for her for almost 3 years straight.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she has a house. She has several houses in the Bahamas, actually. And whenever she comes, if I'm available, I would go and cook for her and that sort of stuff.
Right.
But it was about a year later, after cooking for her for a very long time, understanding and knowing and listening to her and really getting to the depth of her cuisine and what she liked. She called me one day, and I'll never forget. She said, "Chef, your hand turn over."
What?
That means you switch. Your hand turn over.
Okay.
Turn over.
Hmm.
Your hand turn over. Which means you went from being somebody who needed the skills and the technical side of it to somebody who now cooks with soul and emotion and heart. And from that day on to the next, to now, I she's never complained about anything I made for her.
Hand turn over.
Yeah, hand turn over.
So that's when, so what clicked with you though? What clicked that caused that to happen? Do you know?
Again, it's just the soulfulness.
Yeah.
You know, being less technical and being more emotionally connected to the food.
Right. Oh, I know.
That's totally different.
I know how I want this to taste. Put some lime because I could bring the lime, bring this out or put this garnet.
You know I'd go.
Yeah.
You know I'd go. Yeah. That kind of food.
But also what you said.
Yeah, for sure.
You said when your grandmother's was, worked at the hotel at the, what is it? Which hotel was it?
Nassau Beach.
Nassau Beach. Now, again, I'm having some younger persons listen to this, so they don't know about Nassau Beach Hotel. There were, to me, and I always tell people, see my wife, she's younger than me, I say, you missed the days of the Nassau Beach Hotel in the Crystal Palace. That's when you used to get service.
Right.
Them people knew service.
Right.
The food was different. Yeah. Everything was different. Like, if you train under people during that time, my boy, you good. You good.
Yeah. Well, I'm very fortunate to have. I'm not just doing my formal apprenticeship years. I trained at Crystal Palace, Marriott. So I was around and I saw incredible service at Solamari. Mm-hmm. I saw incredible service at Le Grill. I saw incredible cooking techniques and variety of food from the buffet and from the theater, the right. dinner theater that they had there. And then also to one of my fondest memories of food in the Bahamas is Howard Johnson ice cream on Sunday.
There we go. Yeah, you know what we're talking about.
an experience that hasn't been duplicated ever since.
Exactly.
And those are some of the things that I think, even now as I process and develop concepts for the Bahamas, etc., and work on all these things that I'm working on, my cookbooks, everything else, those are the foundation from which I built.
Right.
Today's person, today's customer, today's guest may not be able to appreciate a Howard Johnson of yesteryear,
right.
but they certainly would appreciate a new style take on a Howard Johnson because it was so soulful. Howard Johnson was the first and the only place I personally know to this day that Bahamians used to wait almost 30 something minutes, 40 something minutes.
Yeah,
sometimes you're in the line. You're in the line for more than an hour, and nobody complaining.
No, you want to get that boy? Yes, you are correct. I almost forgot about that.
110%. Nobody complaining. You never went into Howard Johnson on a Sunday and get served right away. Never.
No.
Never ever in your life could you ever tell me, honestly, that you came to Howard Johnson. You drove up the little hill that was used there.
Yeah.
You got out of your car to the front. And somebody gone and parked the car and everybody was waiting and it was a meeting place. So it wasn't just about the food and the ice cream. Cause I could assure you it wasn't the best ice cream in the world. The ice cream itself.
Right. It was the ambiance. It was the people. It was what was going on.
The experience.
Yeah. Experience. Of course.
you met the regular Bahamian. You met the affluent Bahamian. You met, East, West, North, and South. Because for the persons who were of a different demographics,
right.
that was the treat.
Mm-hmm.
You used to save up to go to Howard Johnson.
Boy.
And the persons who were affluent, that was the treat.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't had to save up, but it was still a treat. You know Howard Johnson. Tell me another day it used to be packed. Because I can't remember it.
Sundays was the day you go out. That was the time you go driving. Yeah, it was Sundays.
Okay, there you go.
And it's so weird because I'm doing that now with my daughter. Like Sundays, I'm trying to get her to that thing where we go driving. And my wife even like take her and they say, okay, this is where that used to be or this used to happen in this year. Because things have changed over the years. You know, and sometimes we pass buildings or we see lots or we see old buildings and don't know the history behind it. But I remember when I was young, my grandmother, my grandfather, loaded myself, my brother, and my cousins in the back of the station wagon. We went for ice cream. They hailed everybody and talk. Then we went driving around the island.
Of course.
That was Sundays.
You know why? Let me tell you this, and I show you, this can blow your mind. You know why?
Why?
Because that was the internet of the days, of them days.
Yeah.
That was the internet. That was the time you communicate. That's the time when you see and you don't see.
Yeah.
Certain people you see on Sundays, that's how you know they're still around.
Yeah, because you don't see them through the week.
And if you don't see them on the Sunday, you're wondering what happened.
Yeah.
And that's family included.
Yeah.
That's family included. Because that's the time when your cousins and your uncles and your aunties and everybody used to meet at something going on in the weekend in the Bahamas.
Right.
Especially in Nassau.
Right.
Saturdays was kong salad and stew and boil. Sundays was Howard Johnson and dry Grand Island. Snow cone and all them other different things was Sundays.
Yes. You know, exactly. I never really thought of it like that. It was something we used to do, but I never really thought of it to that point that,
that was the internet.
It was, when you think about it, everything was surrounded by food. It was always about food. So interesting.
Of course. And that's why in my book and everything that I've been doing as of late, you know, we're talking about food culture in the Bahamas.
Right.
And how it relates and how it's so important to who Bahamians are. But, you know, I'm working on this piece right now that, you know, is absolutely kicking my hip because I'm trying to make it in a way that it really, really touches the people that read it.
Right.
Because, you know, Bahamian food and culture, it literally is being lost. Mm-hmm. Not because it doesn't exist, but because it's being overshadowed. It's being diluted. It's being, you know, kind of distorted. And it's not really being given the just place that it deserves in our history.
Right.
In our, even nowadays, again, this story that we're talking about now and the people that would listen to this, a lot of them will be surprised that these things even used to happen.
Right.
Bahamians nowadays, kong salad, for example, is something that everybody eat every day now.
Yes.
Kong salad never used to be eaten every day.
Yeah, that was once in a while.
You couldn't afford it and it wasn't available.
Right.
That's why I asked somebody this question just yesterday for the piece that I'm working on. And I asked them what it was our national dish. And she told me, conch. And I told her, no, it's not conch at all. And after, you know, talking about it for a while, she realized and she said, you know, you're absolutely right. Because my grandmother always used to tell us that they never used to eat conch as much as we eat conch now.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. They never used to.
What is the Bahamian national dish?
You tell me.
Well, as you're saying it, right, I'm thinking... I don't know if it's because I like it. I really love fried fish and fried rice.
Before you answer that, what is the Jamaican national dish?
I really don't know. I know they do something with ackee and cod fish or something like that. I'm not too sure.
It is ackee and cod fish. Okay, of course you know it.
Okay.
Ackee and cod fish.
Right.
So this is my point. I did a survey.
Right.
9 out of 10 people answered the, Jamaican national dish.
Right.
And if you ask 10 people what is the Bahamian national dish, you get 10 different answers.
Wow.
You may get one person that stumbles across the answer. So here's two things about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely going to touch on this in the book. But here's two things about that. One, if nobody knows what the national dish is, it's not the national dish, just by default.
Okay.
You can't have a national dish with nobody knows.
Makes sense. Okay.
No. And the national dish of the Bahamas is boiled fish.
It is?
Yes, it is.
Let's go down that road. Okay.
It's a historical fact that I dug up in a very old Bahamian law culture book. And I had to go to the library for and had to do all sorts of research. And I had to ask members of parliament and old historians and all sorts of people to uncover the fact.
Right.
So again, by default, I'll have to say the Bahamas doesn't have a national dish.
Right.
But there's a reason we don't have a national dish.
And that is what?
The reason, and I don't want to go into it too much because I'm talking about it in the story doing.
Yeah.
But there's a pretty good reason why we don't have a national dish. And it's because of regional specificity.
Specificity. Okay. Okay.
You understand? See, what you have to understand is the Bahamas is very unique globally as being one of the few countries in the world that is an archipelago of islands.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so regionally, everything is different. You understand that?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're collectively we're Bahamian.
Yeah.
But island to island, we're different.
Very different. That's why I asked, why did you say that? Because I have a story behind that. But I want to hear why you said it was boiled fish.
but that's what I'm saying. But again, historically, it's boiled fish. But yeah. Again, when you're talking about location to location,
right, it changes.
Again,
right.
without giving everything away, what I want you to realize now is, if I give potato, onion, a grouper, lime, salt, and pepper to each major island,
yeah,
and tell them make boiled fish, yeah, each of them could be different.
Yeah.
Do you know that there's an island in the Bahamas that makes boiled fish with coconut milk?
No, I did not.
Okay, then. See, I can't tell you no more because I can give you the story.
Oh, man. Now you got me all interested now. Okay. So before you continue.
But, you know, that is what food does. Food, yeah, gets everybody interested, especially when they talk to somebody like myself who's been digging and researching and going down in the depths of this for about the last 7 years. This ain't no surface research. This research.
I would think so. I would really think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, but, for example, I'll stop after this.
Uh-huh.
For example, in Andras, boiled fish has little to no broth.
Okay.
In Nassau, you have to have broth in boiled fish.
Yes.
If the boiled fish don't have no water, that ain't boiled fish. That's steam fish in Nassau. Because Nassauians like to dunk bread and stuff, yeah, in their boiled fish.
Right.
In Andras, they don't do that.
Hmm.
In Andras, you have very, very, very little water. In fact, because I worked in Central, North, and South Andhra.
Right.
Which again, there's regional differences in those three locations. And I can tell you, when I used to work, the first place I worked was in Fresh Creek Andhras.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to Fresh Creek Andhras and I was making boiled fish, the woman who was working there with me, she immediately stopped me and said, "Now listen here, chef. Don't come in here making that Nassau boiled fish. You don't eat boiled fish like that around here."
Yeah.
And so I said to her, "Show me." The concentration of flavor is so intense.
Right.
You don't need a lot of liquid.
Wow.
You go to Freeport,
mm-hmm,
and most likely if you eat from somebody who is cooking real Freeport style food,
mm-hmm,
you can definitely see bacon or salt pork or salt beef in your boiled fish.
See, this is why you had me so confused, because I grew up between Nassau and Freeport, and I noticed the difference between Nassau and Freeport boiled fish. That's why I'm like, boiled fish? But it's so different.
Again, but that is exactly why I'm telling you what I'm telling you. That's why, even though it's a national dish, it's not.
Yeah. Wow.
It's the same way I'm comparing it to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Southern food, Creole food, Californian food, New York food, they're all different.
Yeah, yeah.
Texas barbecue, mm-hmm, they're all different. You go to each region, the barbecue belt, mm-hmm, each barbecue is distinctly different. So why is it that we have what we call Bahamian food?
Mm-hmm.
How can you have Bahamian food when you get 700 islands and keys? You get people on remote keys still cooking with seawater.
What? But I didn't.
You would never see a Nassauian cooking with seawater.
That's a thing. That's actually a thing. People do that.
Buddy, you have people in the Bahamas who eat seagull eggs, buddy.
Stop talking, fool. What? No, I'm not making fun. But that's amazing. I mean, oh gee.
It is. Listen to me. I have a wall in my apartment,
right,
that is literally covered with things that I have unveiled during my time of research and development.
Mm-hmm.
And had it not been for Corona, I'd have been wrapping up my book right now.
Right.
But one of the things that I'm going to do is I'm going to visit, study, sleep, and eat on these major islands that are going to be featured in the book.
Right.
Because I want everybody to hear and to know these things and to know that these things still exist and to understand how different each of our islands are, not just in terms of food, but in terms of communication, in terms of way of life and culture,
yeah,
there are things that unite us as a whole, but there are things that we do absolutely differently. For example, another little quick example, Junkanoo in Nassau mm-hmm. is huge.
Yeah.
But have you ever been to a small island
yes.
and see how enthralled
yes.
they are with their little Junkanoo that we would laugh at in Nassau?
Yes, I have. So
okay,
I've experienced that.
Okay then. So everybody is Junkanoo.
Yeah.
Everybody Junkanoo come under the same umbrella. But you ain't want to go to a Junkanoo in Bryland. You ain't want to go to a Junkanoo in Bryland. Costume, no costume, old, young, big, small, everybody
they
in the road.
They out
you
there.
Ain't know who winning or who losing because everybody in the road. You understand?
Yeah.
Something that Nassauians, especially younger Nassauians, could not even imagine.
Right.
They would call that a scrap room.
Yes.
Exactly. Same thing with food, my friend.
You got my mind racing right now because now I'm thinking of all the islands I've been through and what I've eaten. And I'm starting to see that pattern that they were not the same. Now, I usually pay attention, like you say, to communication. I can usually tell where people are from based on how they talk and the way they pronounce their vowels. I can tell them from where they are.
Right.
So I know right. on every island, everyone have a different accent. But I
right.
have never really sat down and say, "But food is different on every island." But now that you say it, it's like clicking in my head, like, that's true. When I was in Exuma, it was different. When I went to Eleuthera and Bryland, even between Eleuthera, not Eleuthera, and Bryland was different. Freeport and Abaco was different. I'm like, wow.
Of course.
Wow.
Think of all of them like you do the states.
Yeah.
Think of each of them as an individual state.
Yeah.
That's all. When let me ask you this quick question. Mm-hmm. You said you grew up and you lived between Nassau and Freeport, right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. Who in Nassau, you know, is served fried fish with pancake? Sorry, not pancake, panny cake.
By the way, that's only in Freeport. That's only in Freeport, Eight Mile Rock area.
Okay, then. okay, well, I rest my case. You can't get fried fish in Eight Mile Rock and don't get panny cake.
Exactly. I know it. Oh, my goodness.
You can't. It can't. You'll get panny cake quicker than you get a fork.
Yes.
The man might forget your fork, but he ain't gonna forget the panny cake because the panny cake and the fish is the same thing.
Yeah.
They ain't separated.
My goodness.
But if you go in anywhere in Nassau,
mm-hmm.
anybody, I'm talking about the best chef in Nassau, and he gotta go look for a panny cake recipe. Wow. In Freeport, you grow up knowing how to
yes.
make panny cake and eat
grow up with that. You're right. I grew up with that.
So again, this isn't something that people don't know, you know. It's just something that people don't think about.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
That's all it is.
Because not until you just mentioned that you took me back to my childhood, and I remember my grandmother giving me that. A lot.
Yeah, of course.
Wow.
There are things that make the Bahamas the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
There are dishes and techniques that make the Bahamas, across the board. But then, that's the same in the States. There's American cuisine.
Yeah.
You understand? There's American food. That's pretty, that encompasses everything. There's Chinese food.
Mm-hmm.
There's Latin food. There's Indian food.
Mm-hmm.
But there's regional specifics for every place, every province,
state, yeah.
every settlement, every state. So we can't just put everything into one and say, oh, it's just Bahamian food. How does a restaurant say they're a Bahamian restaurant
mm-hmm.
and they just serving Nassau food?
Wow.
You're not a Bahamian restaurant. You're a Nassauian restaurant or Nassau restaurant.
Even
in Nassau,
that,
for example, huh?
Yeah, even speaking on that, I can tell you the truth. The first time I've even heard of stew boil was in Freeport. I didn't even know that existed.
See, there you go.
That's the first time I heard it. Even heard that was in Freeport. It was years later, at least but 10, 15 years later, that I heard of a store of a restaurant over here offering stew boil. And when I taste it, but I say this ain't stew boil. This ain't right. they couldn't
there you
it.
Go. There you go.
Wow.
It, Nassau is probably one of the only islands that I have visited that I know that you could get away serving Bahamian style rice, mm-hmm. whether it be peas and rice, corn and rice, okra and rice, whatever kind of rice, using parboiled rice. Okay. That's the only place I know you could get away with that. Right?
Let's get into this rice situation, right? Because it's so weird. Parboiled, and you're so correct. See, man, you jogging my mind like crazy. Growing up in Freeport, my dad lived in the city of Freeport. My grandmother was in Seagrave, Eight Mile Rock. So I was between those two when I was in Grand Bahama. Coming to Nassau, right. My grandmother's over here. And my grandmother stemmed from Gambia, so old-time people. My grandmother in Grand Bahama, I have never seen her make parboiled rice. Never. I didn't know what that was until I came to Nassau when I was young. I came to Nassau when I moved to Nassau completely to stay over here. And my grandmother was like, oh, cool. She sent you to the store. Parboiled rice? What is parboiled? I didn't know what that was. So it was like, I think, like you said, only Nassauvians deal with this parboiled rice. But I growing up, I did not eat that in Freeport. I did not eat that at all. Why is that?
Well, you know, parboiled rice was introduced using mainly through the hospitality industry.
Okay.
Because parboiled rice is a safe rice or a simple rice. It's hard for you to cook friendly parboiled rice.
Mm.
So parboiled rice was used because it allowed you to cook in bulk.
Right.
And it allowed you to operate in hotels. It lasts longer. Oh. It doesn't overcook as easily. Et cetera, et cetera. That's what it means, parboiled.
Okay.
So that's where and how it was introduced. But initially, and still in most of your island kitchens, they wouldn't use parboiled rice.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I don't use it either. If I have to make even a large amount of rice, I use jasmine rice because jasmine rice is so fragrant. It's kind of reminiscent of the rice that they would have been using a long time ago, rice that was brought over from Asia and Africa with colonialists.
Right.
So that parboiled rice, no, you can't. You go on some islands, again, if you're a chef and you go to work in other islands and you order parboiled rice, you end up parboiled rice and get sent back on the boat up in it. End of story. Then don't even let's discuss it. That's what's going to happen. That ain't even for no discussion.
Chef, let me ask this then. When is your book going to come out? Because here's the reason why I'm asking for that. Culture is something I've always debated in the Bahamas. Why? And if that is another podcast on the website, we'll be talking about Bahamian culture. And the same thing was being said. What is culture in the Bahamas? But here it is now. You're talking about food culture, something that makes us, like this is ingrained in us. And as you mentioned, it's so different from island to island. This is probably why we just can't really say what is Bahamian culture because it's so diverse throughout every major island. So with your book, because Sonic, you got a lot of stuff in this book. Now, I ready to buy this now. When is this book coming out? What's your timeline for this book?
No, I was supposed to work on it this year. I was supposed to also do my event this year and to do a bunch of stuff this year. But who knows now with Corona, because the book has, I have to travel to 7 of the major islands.
Right.
Because we're shooting a pilot for myself. We're shooting images because it is a lifestyle and recipe book. So it's going to take some work and some time. So obviously with, you know, Corona and all of the stops and you can't go and all this, it has affected it. So I can't put a timeline on it. No. But what I can tell you is even now, so I've been developing more and more content to the point where, you know, this is something that we have to discuss. But let me just take you back to what you said quickly. When you talked about culture, what everybody needs to remember is that there are three major components of culture globally.
All right.
And if you can identify those, single those out and work on those and understand those, you'll understand culture. Mm. And that's in any region throughout the world. Food, music, and art. Mm. And art encompasses religion and belief as well.
Right.
But food, music, and art. You can listen to your podcast. You can look at research. You can do whatever you want. And you'll see that it's broken down into those three major groups. Mm-hmm. Because what you have to remember, I tell people this, and I use this quote all the time. Your plate is your flag. Mm. Your plate is your flag, and your food is an ambassador for your region. Yeah. One of the first things people do whenever they visit a country, the Bahamas, wherever it is, whenever they visit, one of the first things that introduces them to the region is the food.
Yes.
And so that is why I'm such a strong advocate for us to go back into a lot of the things that we used to do so that we're able to tell the story more effectively and more authentically. For example, when last, and I don't hide under the bush when I say this, and I'm not afraid to challenge anybody and say this, but when last you went to any primary tourist destination, and for the most part, unless it's a smaller resort on the out island, when last you been to any of those locations and had authentic peas and rice? Regular long grain rice, shell green peas,
yeah.
Dry conch, salt beef or salt pork, no browning, no soy sauce, goat pepper, dried in the oven by thyme,
yeah.
And crushed tomatoes out of the bottle, fermented tomatoes actually. Because the way that they put those tomatoes in a glass soda bottle, they slightly ferment.
Again, the only place in those eight Morocco is to get them stuff.
No. Okay, so that is what I'm saying. So we're not really doing a good job presenting ourselves to our visitors, because first of all, you could find more non-Bahamian restaurants throughout the Bahamas than you do Bahamian restaurants. I say Bahamian, I explained that already to say it needs to be a representation of everybody. And if it's not, then it needs to be called a regional restaurant. For example, why does a restaurant in 8 Mile Rock call themselves a Bahamian restaurant?
Right.
When they serve an 8 Mile Rock style food.
Exactly. And they just got to move a few miles in the city and things change.
Exactly. Because the chicken nest corn fritters come on. And even when you think about it, the chicken nest corn fritters, and I sure you know chicken nest corn fritters.
Yeah, come on, everybody know chicken nest, man.
Okay, so chicken nest corn fritters, if you bring chicken nest corn fritters with the same staff and put them inside a major hotel in Nassau and tell them make the fritters, it ain't gonna be the same. You know why?
Why?
Because chicken nest corn fritters is an experience. Mm. It's not a dish.
Yeah, the whole location, and you meet people there, and you laugh, and you drink. Yeah, you're right. Because that's where I go to see my friends.
Okay, then. It's the same way I tell people all the time. Kong salad is an experience and not a dish. You'll hardly ever find me making Kong salad in away from where Kong salad is usually made or eaten.
Right.
This kong salad isn't supposed to be in a bowl with all kind of endive garnish and all kind of tomato rolls and all these different garbage. And no, that ain't kong salad. Because kong salad needs to be by the dock. Kong salad needs to be something that you see prepared. Kong salad needs to be around natives talking native dialect.
Playing dominoes.
Topics. All of that is a part of kong salad. Kong salad needs to be paired with the perfect drink, which is usually a local beer.
Yep.
And that is a part of it. You take any one of those out of the equation and it's not the same thing.
You know, it's weird that you say that because, which I'm going to ask you a second question, but it's weird that you say that I would not eat Kong salad beyond that point myself. You know, I never really thought of why I do that. I see these persons like in different parts. There's a guy on Wolf Road. Of course, you have the guy out at Canberra. They make good Kong salad. But I just don't feel like I want to sit there and eat it. Now, if you take me, under the bridge.
Canberra is a little bit better because he has a little bit of location.
And he buy the sea. He buy the sea.
Yeah, he buy the sea.
But you're back
to the
sea.
But it ain't the same.
It ain't the same.
Yeah. It ain't the same.
I never
It ain't the same. Guess what? I could go for Kong salad. And you could say, where you is? I say, I'm getting a Kong salad. And you say, bring me one. Your Kong salad and my Kong salad make the same time, the same way.
Yeah.
And your Kong salad experience and my Kong salad experience ain't gonna be the same.
No.
I can come back and tell you I just had the most amazing Kong salad and it was fantastic. And I meet my boys out there and everything else. And you can come back and tell me it was okay.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So it ain't the same freshness. The lime then start to over pickle the ingredients.
Yeah.
You ain't in the same location. You ain't had the same conversation I had. You ain't had the same people I have. It ain't the same thing.
How do you do that? Okay, sorry, before I ask that question, the second part of my question, where did it change? Because now, like I mentioned, we have, I guess it's the younger generation. I don't want to say the younger generation. It's just that people are trying to be more adventurous with their business, so they go in different locations. So that experience is in there that we might have grown up with. Do you think for them, they're still having that type of experience because that's what they're used to? Is that?
Oh, because.
How does it work?
Because you just said it. It's one of those things that you don't think about, but it actually makes a huge difference. You ask anybody. I don't care if you 10 years old or you 110. You ask anybody. Kong salad in a hotel or Kong salad by your favorite person on the dock. Tell me which one is the best.
Of course you're going by the dock, man. You can sit down there.
Okay then.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that.
That right. Answer your question right there. It's an experience. But again, we don't think about that. We don't think about that. And that's not something that's actually identified and shared.
Does that also pertain? I'm thinking now, because does that pertain to buffet? I'm not a fan of buffets. I feel as if I eat, but I don't enjoy the food. But if I go to a certain restaurant, like you say, with some ambiance, man, look, I had the best time. Because I think it's the sound as well. If a buffet is so much noise going on, it's not as personal. The food is just laid out for you versus when you go to a different restaurant and it's just more you and the person who is there. You can hear the conversation. Even if it's a few friends, it's just different. I'm just talking for me. So I'm just wondering, extend to that as well?
No. Well, again, they're all different experiences. For example, Sea Grapes, the big buffet that used to be over by Atlantis.
Yeah.
The buffet that used to be by the old Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
Seashore and all those places. Mm-hmm. And the buffet that used to be by, you may not even remember this one, but the buffet that used to be by Club Landor.
Yeah, I've been to that.
Okay. See, again, those were all a part of experiences. Mm-hmm. For example, when you went to these buffets on a Sunday, there's some families that go there almost every Sunday. Sun Fundays, you'll see them there all the time, et cetera, et cetera. That's a part of the experience.
Right.
That's a part of the meet and greet. That's the part of being, oh, we know they come in so we can give them the same table again.
Yeah.
We can do this. We can do that. And there's sometimes where when you see an overabundance, you're like, okay, this is what I really feel like getting into today. And there's sometimes you want a dining experience that is a little bit more reserved and a little bit more personable than you would a buffet. Hmm. But again, when you look at food as an experience and not as just, you know, nourishment, it's totally different. And in my business, people that create experiences last longer and are more profitable. Because you could cook home and eat. So you come in and meet for an experience.
And people say that, child, I gotta eat this food at home. I gotta make this myself.
Exactly. Because it wasn't nothing special.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So that's a part of it. And that's one of the things that I think we continue to lose in the Bahamas. Me personally, I don't like tropical Kong salad.
Okay.
Because I'm a purist. I don't like tropical corn salad.
You want just
I understand, you count your onions and the basics.
Original
scotch or chunky scotch with onion and sometimes tomato. If I really, 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 really miss all, I'll go for a corn salad. But other than that, no. Give me a original scotch or give me a chunky scotch. That's it. But I understand it, but even in the evolution of making corn salad in the Bahamas, the one thing remains the same.
What's that?
First of all, if I see you make my corn salad, I want that.
Can't bring that from the back, eh? No.
You could have literally just made corn salad for somebody and have enough corn salad left over for you to sell another corn salad.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, you got a problem selling that.
Yeah. They want it fresh. They want to
see it. The only person to buy that is somebody who, in a rush or may know you or whatever. But other than that, you can't tell Bahamians that corn salad shouldn't be a bespoke experience.
That's true.
Wow. And that is why, and all that I've said so far, that is why you can now see how important food is to culture.
Yes.
You can't be talking for an hour and just scraping the surface. And that ain't an important aspect of culture. You understand?
You're right.
100%. And that needs to be it. John Canoe, music. Let's talk about John Canoe right quick. Uh-huh. Music, right? Mm-hmm. And John Canoe. Let me ask you this. Somewhere before, during, or after, food was involved in your John Canoe experience?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Usually it was okay, before. For me, it was always before. We always eat before. Usually we have our chicken sauce or whatever with Johnny Cake, because you know
there we go. All right.
My goodness.
And here's, I'll tie into another part of it. Your beliefs, mm-hmm. your religion, mm-hmm. and art mm-hmm. is all around on Boxing Day. It touches all of those.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you're right. Yes.
Around the Christmas holidays, all of those three main components that I just addressed are touched.
Yes.
And when do you think, or when do you relate, or when do you think Bahamians and I talking about Bahamians in the Bahamas and the diaspora of Bahamians around the world, when do Bahamians feel the most Bahamian?
The most Bahamian?
Around the holidays.
That's around the holidays. Everybody festive and fun and moving around.
Around the holidays.
That's when most art shows are as well. Now that you say it.
Everything. Watch night service.
Yep.
Christmas service. Art. Music. Food with your family. All them things is happening around the holidays. And that's when most Bahamian pride going to bed.
You know, let me tell you, I don't know if this is happening in your family, right? But growing up with my grandmother and then with my mother, we used to do this thing, or they used to do this thing every Christmas. My grandmother used to make these little sandwiches, either with the cheese sandwich or tuna sandwich, and then cut them up in little small pieces. And they used to just have them out. And as people come around, like, it stopped with my mother. And I was talking to my wife about it because her family never did it. But I talk to other people, and they say, yeah, we used to do that. Do you remember that? Did that ever happen?
Let me tell you this. Again, what you're talking about is encompassed by what I'm talking about, uh-huh. which is food is always available around the holidays.
Food, yeah, no matter what.
It's specific to families.
Yeah.
It changes from family to family, household to household. But food can be around during the holidays.
Wow.
You understand? Because food is fellowship. Food is come inside.
Yeah.
Food is join us.
Yeah.
Food is welcome. Food is let me tell you my story, or let me tell you what happened to me, because I ain't gonna see you for another couple of months.
Yeah.
You probably live away and you only come home for the holidays. So let's break bread and let's talk. So food is available. Whether or not you had cheese or cornbread spread or you had a tuna spread, because it wasn't no salad, because it spread so thin, yes. You can't even tell how much
exactly,
it is.
Exactly.
So you can't call it salad. That's different, because you got to make that stretch.
Yes.
That's a whole different kettle of fish. So you get tuna spread, cheese spread, combi spread. Yeah. You get the ham with leftover from Christmas.
Yeah.
And you're putting that on a piece of bread. You get hard cheese. You're putting that on a piece of bread.
Wow.
You get some leftovers, which you could offer somebody. Now, don't forget. Every other time of the year, don't come to my house unannounced and want me offer you food. Because yeah, I ain't into that.
You're right.
That's a regular thing.
You can't surprise me. Yeah.
You can't surprise me because I'm prepared for you and I really ain't you like that. We's family and we's friends, but unless I invite you over for food, very rarely, you gotta be, I talk about close family,
yeah,
for you to say, come get something to eat or hang around, let me go cook something quick for all us to eat.
Right.
That's different. But for the normal time of the year, food is not something that is readily available and out in Bahamian households. But around the holidays, it certainly is.
Man, I gotta.
You get some soup. You get some this. You get some something with Ron, what everybody could dig into. Or if you can ask somebody how long you can be here. I can be here for a little while. I can hang out with y'all. When you look sauce on the stove.
So, exactly. Something getting cooked. You're right.
Sauce on the stove. The rest of the year, you need to hurry up, wrap this up because we gonna go cook and we ain't want to include you in this part.
Wow.
So you can't talk Bahamian without talking food. Sorry.
Wow.
Sorry. It doesn't exist. You would have people that will take out music. You would have take people that have a different belief system. And you have people that have a different appreciation for art.
Right.
You know what I mean? If, for example, it's a Christian house, there might be people, we don't go to junkin' or this or that or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Or whatever your systems or family or whatever it is. But you evil.
Definitely, boy.
You go to somebody's house and the only art they have on the wall is family photos.
Yeah, but they still eat.
You may go to somebody's house and somebody in the house is Anglican, somebody is Baptist, and somebody is Catholic. But everybody eating.
Never thought about it. So, okay. Let's switch this a little bit. How do we now preserve, like you say, what is the semblance of Bahamian culture of food? Not to go to the way, and I'm going to use this because I think you may know about it, using the rock ovens. I don't even know how many people still exist can actually bake in one of them. Probably in the farm island, you're going to find some persons. So how is it that we can, how can we preserve this culture and pass this on? And I know it all depends on us because we have to do it. We have to say, you know what, this is something that we do. It's a tradition, but it's also going to keep what it means for us to be Bahamian on this island. How do we preserve this thing? How do we do that?
Well, here's the thing. There's two ways that we need to do it, and I'll go through it really quickly. One is personally, and two is professionally. Mm-hmm. The reason why our Bahamian food culture is so watered down is because of hospitality and tourism. We've altered our recipes to cater to the tourists, for example. You go inside a hotel or a major restaurant that caters either equally or more so to tourists. What happens is, or don't put that in there because plenty of people don't eat that. Right. Or don't season it like that. Put the salt on the table. If they want more salt, they'll add it themselves, et cetera, et cetera. And you know then what happens? What then now happens is those same cooks, those same servers, those same people who work in that environment, they now take that training and principle home.
Yeah.
So now they slowly have taken out all of the salt, beef, and the dry conch, etc., because that's what they're doing to work all the time. So they eliminating that from their diet, etc. And so now what does that mean? It is slowly moving away from everybody. So nobody gets to see it for the most part. So the way for us to do that is to have a personal commitment to make sure that food culture in the Bahamas does not disappear. But also to, I always say this all the time, the biggest challenge for me is, first, in every hotel. Secondly, in standalone restaurants. And thirdly, everybody else who popping up and doing all these other stuff across the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Be mindful of the fact that, again, and one of the reasons, ways you could prove my point is that the most of it is being destroyed, quote unquote, in Nassau.
Yes.
Where you have the most tourists.
Yeah.
Because you're still going to some of these family islands and they're still doing. Your example just now was I probably could find it more so in the family island. So my question to you is, why is it that a major resort doesn't have a rock of it?
Yeah, just about to say that.
Tell me why. Tell me what is the reason why they don't. Tell me why a major hotel, resort, or restaurant, why it's either Bohemian Night or it's a Bohemian Corner, mm-hmm. where they get some absolutely almost disgusting versions of Bahamian food tucked somewhere on the side, and they saying they representing the Bahamas.
The Bahamas.
Why is that? Why is that? That can't wait. You making boiled fish and you have all kind of green pepper, yellow pepper, red pepper, carrot, onion, sweet potato, olive, cabbage, all kind of things in it. And you're saying this boiled fish because it looked a little bit more appealing, et cetera, et cetera. You can't do that. Hmm. You understand? That's not a good representation of who and what we are. So the way that we need to do is to go and now do what the world is doing, you know. Hmm. It ain't just us. The world is fighting now for more authentic cuisine.
Right.
Travelers are now traveling and saying, you know what? Where do you eat? Don't tell me where the tourists is eat. I want to know where you is eat. But the problem is where me and you is eat disappearing too.
Yes.
So we need to make sure that we preserve those practices personally and professionally. That's what we need to do. You need to also make sure that your family and everybody else, like you were saying earlier, we taking road trips around the island, we doing this and that. Instead of planning vacations to Florida and all these other places, have you been to every major island in the Bahamas?
Yeah.
Don't tell me it's too expensive. Don't tell me it this. Because people is paying money to do whatever they want.
Exactly.
People all in Dubai and Greece and this place and the next place. And some of them never been to Yalucha.
Exactly. Never see your own country. Wow.
So, and you get cheering. And so are you cheering to ever go to them places? It's still better to island hop, you know.
Yes.
It is still better. And that's what I plan to do. And that's what I would have been doing this year. Every major island in the Bahamas that I've never been to is on the list. You know, 110%.
One thing I learned from my mom and dad, they're like world travelers. And between the two of them, I think they've already been to every island in the Bahamas. But my dad did something one time, and I tried to reproduce it. He traveled from Freeport. He drove down to East End, caught the boat from East End to Crown Haven. From Crown Haven, rode down into Marsh Harbor, had some fun up in there. Then from Marsh Harbor, drive all the way down to Sandy Point. From Sandy Point, took a boat to Eleuthera. In Eleuthera, not Eleuthera, spent some time in North, went down to Governor's Harbor, and then took the boat from Harbor Island to come back to Nassau, and then flew back to Freeport. I'm like,
that's awesome.
I'm like, is that even possible? So I tried it. The farthest I got was Marsh Harbor. As far as I got. But here's what I learned.
I've been to all those places, coincidentally. I've been to all those places. Not as structured as that, but I've been to all those places. And it's such an amazing vibe.
Yes.
It's such an amazing vibe.
But I learned from my dad when it comes to traveling. And this is right back to your point, which you're talking about, island hopping. You know what he does? Because sometimes my dad would just take on a plane and go somewhere in one of the family islands, never been before. But you know what I learned from him. He would go into a bar. He said, "Dad, would you just go in the bar for?" He say, "Everything you need to know, someone in the bar knows." And he told me the story.
Yeah, for sure.
When he went to Abaco, he knew some people in Crown Haven, so he borrowed their car. I'm like, "Dude, do you know how far it is from Crown Haven to Marsh Harbor?" And they told him, "Took the car and just leave the car there."
Yeah.
And then whilst he was in the bar, he asked the gentleman, "Man, they trying to see if they could get the Lutra." And the guy was like, "Man, take my Jeep. Just leave." It's like, "What you mean? He tell you take his Jeep? This man don't know you." He's like, "Yeah, he give me the keys."
That ain't nothing.
Exactly. That's a totally like different lifestyle. Again, everyone is different. Like you're saying, not every island is different. The people react.
But that still exists. That still exists in the islands.
We have to experience that.
When you're based in places in places like Nassau, and then more so even in you know Grand Bahama, etc. You can't even begin to fathom that that exists.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't imagine that. But I can tell you there are some places in the Bahamas where people can't tell you where the house keys is.
Yes. I experienced that in Inagua.
They can't tell you.
Inagua was like, what?
They say,
wow.
You say you come in. They say, okay, when you come, just go put your stuff to the door and then come meet me to this place.
Yeah.
Where you can leave the key? The door open. The door open. When you go there, ain't even really no lock on the door for the door to lock. But those experiences still exist. Those are the places that are still definitely very rich in food culture.
Yeah.
And they're very rich in the kind of culture that they have. Everybody in the Bahamas has heard or know that they eat donkey and hush hush.
How you know?
In Southern Bahamas.
How you know?
They know about that. But you never hear about that in no place else. That's not something that's popular in no place else. At Ignite last year, we made donkey salty sausage.
What?
And so everybody was absolutely 110% blown away by these donkey salty sausage. Because not only was it from a meat that they have never had before,
right,
but it was salty sausage that put everybody or took everybody back to their childhood.
That's what it does.
But some people who tell you they ain't had salty in about 25 years.
Need the hot sauce, put some hot sauce on that. We good.
And it was salty sausage in a bag with, mm-hmm. with fresh made hot sauce and the whole nine yards.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So again, that if you ask me a way to invite today's generation into yesteryear's food culture.
Yeah.
Doing stuff like that would definitely bring everybody on board.
Speaking of things, because I remember this thing you did on your Instagram thing. I didn't watch. I don't know if it was a full video or not, where you nailed the fish to a wood and put it in a tin top.
Right.
Like, okay, what's happening here? Like, where did you get that from? What is that about?
Well, that's a concept that I developed, and we were in talks with a major hotel mm-hmm. to do an authentic Bahamian restaurant.
Ah.
We didn't get the deal, but we definitely did some events to kind of get them into the concept.
Right.
And so that was the appetizer. And so that was one of the things that I had done it once before, and I had done it publicly once before, but it's something that I was practicing. And you know, we were over at Paradise Island.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, multimillionaire. And here I come with my board and my stainless steel wood,
yeah,
my stainless steel nails and my tin cup. And I guess some charcoal, some local charcoal in there. And everybody literally looking like, what is he doing?
Yeah.
Even some of the chefs that I participated with didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I put this thing out and I blazed that up and I put the lobster and the hog snapper behind the flame so that they could slowly roast,
mm-hmm.
it became a magical moment. And literally at the time, the person in charge says, this is what we need to be doing. So I start off the event doing that.
Right.
You understand?
Yeah.
And then the Bahamians that were there could talk about tin tub and, smoking food and curing mm-hmm. food mm-hmm. and old ways we used to do this and all them other different stuff.
Because even that, I've never really learned. I see my grandmother did it where she used to smoke the meat out in the back. People look at me and say, but you're so young. But I say, yeah, but I'm old. So like, I grew up with old people. So I know about outside toilet, but I also know about her when she used to smoke the meat. So I used to have that, like you say, the dried conch that you put inside the food and things like that. So I know about it. And I'll tell you the first time I saw a pig roasted outside in the ground, I just didn't want to leave because I'm like, what are you doing? And the guy was trying to explain, you build this dig for a while. He's there all day digging, first of all. put in some wood on the sides, use some foil paper, and look here. I'm not one who usually eat pork, but my boy, that day, I don't know what he put on
that. You can't help it.
What?
Because it was everything. It was the whole experience and all that. And
exactly.
Let me just make a quick side track here. Do you know that that technique originated from the Taino people in Haiti? It is originally called barbacoa. Barbacoa is where barbecue comes from, which now is so popular in the United States.
Right. Wow.
So barbecue is not American. It's Bahamian. I mean, it's Caribbean.
Caribian. I would have never
it's
thought
Caribbean.
Of that. Because when you say barbecue, you always think of the United States.
Of course, everybody does. But that's a technique that was first developed and first talked about in Haiti. It then migrated somehow. We don't know if it was from or around. They was doing a similar thing, but it went to Latin America,
mm-hmm.
and then it shot over to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
It moved up through the South with the Geechee people and
yes.
the people that were connected to the Caribbean, especially the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
It moved from the South, and then it went up to the barbecue belt, the Carolinas, Texas, and those places. But
wow.
that is originally from Haiti. Then it moved throughout the Caribbean, Latin America, and then to the U.S. Same thing as one of my posts the other day when I got to remind everybody that the Bahamas gifted Hawaii with pineapples.
Yes, I know that.
Oh, get it?
Mm-hmm.
So how can we let all this information
just
die?
Go.
And that's why it's so important for us to put things in books
yeah.
to make sure that we have records. And it's also important that we speak about these things when we're around the dinner table with our kids and our family, et cetera, et cetera.
I learned most of the things early. You know, someone taught me or someone talked to it about me or they
exactly.
showed me. But you just mentioned something about books. I don't think we write enough books. We don't write our own stories.
We do not. We do not. We have never. Somebody said it also greatly. You had heard it saying, if you want to hide something from a brown-skinned person, put it in a book. We need to change that narrative.
Yes.
We need to tell stories. My title, and something that I've been pushing is a culinary griot.
Mm.
A griot is an African storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
A griot is historically a library.
Mm-hmm.
That was the person that passed the information on orally. And even to the people that were able to write, they got most of their information from the griot.
Yes.
So for me, that is such a important task. Because also, like I tell people all the time, we are tomorrow's ancestors.
Huh. There's a point.
But we only talk about our ancestors.
Yeah.
But who can be a Turin ancestor? Me and you.
You're right.
So how we could don't leave things in place?
Yeah.
How are we not doing it? And that's why when you see things like the civil unrest and all these movements and stuff coming around,
mm-hmm.
they ain't by happenstance, you know.
Right.
That's just a continuation of what was happening before. And it's unfortunately it's necessary because you have to leave change.
Yeah.
And the same thing what happened in them years ago is what happening now. People have to fight and unfortunately have to die to get the change or get a step further than where we are today. It's the same thing with food. It's the same thing with music. It's the same thing with art. We have to do it. We have to share it and we have to keep it moving. If not, it will be forgotten. It will not be transferred.
I ain't gonna lie. You kind of making me feel kind of bad right now. And the reason why I'm feeling bad. No, the reason why it's not a bad thing. It's just that it's going to push me to do what I know I needed to do. Cause there are some things that I
exactly.
learned when I was younger that I had put in my heart to teach not only my children, but like my nieces and nephews to pass that on to them. And I did
right.
not do it.
Right.
Because now
that's
they don't have it. They don't, if I die now, that's gone, you know?
Gone.
Boy, yeah.
You said something earlier, and I'll touch on that right quickly.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, I did an event for tourism out by Awaki. I don't know if you remember or know. I don't know if it's still there. It was when I was home. But there was a rock oven out there. Yeah, until I got permission to use it. Yeah. I got permission to use it. And I made all my bread in the rock oven. Mm. Listen to me. I could not get people to leave. It was a line. It was a line when the bread was gone. Yeah. The bread was then gone and I couldn't get people to leave. I like this bread. Go on, y'all. I know what y'all standing up here for. Man, chef, I know you get one N. You get one N in the back there. You get one this, you get one that. You get one piece you saving. I'll buy that from you for $50.
Yeah.
I have it. So it's not that people don't want it. It's not, again, let's talk about this interaction that you and I are having.
Right.
And you're interested in what I'm saying. So imagine if we get a bigger audience, if we're all talking about it, if we're doing it and we're documenting it and it's something that can play over and over and it can keep going or it can be read, it can be shared. And I don't want a cookbook that can end up in some tourist location, you know,
right,
as some sort of souvenir. I want something that could be used in home ec classes, something that will be used at a culinary school. Something that will become, you know, in the libraries of everybody. I want to sell out of this book.
I agree. I think that's possible because I'm, like I say, one, for me, I have a library. And I every time I see something new, I start to add to it. And I just don't add to it. I like to read the book because people come and ask me. I remember a friend of mine came over to me. And he said, man, who books are these? I say, they're my books. I say, you read all of them? I say, every last one. I say, I didn't know you read them. She said, look here, you don't know. How else I can find out the information? Like you say, because people are not telling the stories.
Exactly.
That what you're talking about, I'm so excited for that right now because, man,
awesome.
I remember when I read the book about plants in the Bahamas, what is used for medicinal purposes. And a lot of things I kind of knew already because, hanging with my grandmother, they knew what to use when you use sage for this or that, or what to use for chicken pox or whatever.
Right.
But there were some things I never knew. And then being a part of the National Trust, sometimes they go into the forest with them and they teach you a lot of stuff. And this is things I really want to pass on to my children. But I get these books because if I am not here and I'm to the point where I grow my child up and I'm about to have another and I grow them up respecting books. She has her own books.
Right.
And whenever she take them out, she's careful to turn the page. And I'm always talking, oh, do it this way, do it that way. And so that you hold these books on because these are not just for you. This for who coming after you. You got to pass these down. Because sometimes books just disappear, you know, and that information gone. And I find something that my grandmother told me and I didn't understand until years after she died. Because my grandmother died at 92, by the way. And that was only because she was brokenhearted. Because her sister died when she was 98, I think it was. I mean, they was going for hundreds.
Oh, wow.
All right. And so I know about them eating cassava and stuff because I grew up with them. But my grandmother said it. And she said this in a moment of just being clear. You know, as they get older, they sometimes, you know, go back in time. She said she wished you could take the information out of someone's head and just put it inside a young person's head. That would make so much sense. I'm like, what this woman talking about? Can't do that. But it wasn't until later on that I realized the amount of information that she taught me. And then I realized talking to more older people, the stuff that they had, the things that they went through.
Yeah.
You cannot die holding on to this. Like, for example, I hate to rant about this, but I've heard the story of the Burma Road riot from persons who lived it. That's a totally different story from what they tell us in the books. Totally.
Right.
I'm like, no, you. In fact, I was glad to get it on recorded with someone. And man, I don't know if I want to even release that yet because I don't think the world ready to hear what this man say. It was that vivid because he was there when the guy who got killed. So I was like, man, this thing is serious. But like you say, we have to talk.
We have to do it. And almost every book to date that has been published in the Bahamas, almost 90% of them, they're due for a second edition or a second release.
Yes.
Because they need to be updated. They need to be redone. They need to be republished so that they can go into a wider audience and a wider market. Because let's be honest, some of the books are not inviting enough for the average person. They look like pamphlets.
Yeah, they do.
Or they look like they look like church anniversary books. So you can't sell them. Mm-hmm. So ain't nobody can buy them, and ain't nobody can get the information. They're information packed. they just weren't done well because, again, we don't support publication in the Bahamas.
Right.
So, and that too is something that we need to look at so that, you know, we can, I can tell you right now, I have about 4 or 5 books in my head. Mm-hmm. Easy. And with the right support and everything else that I need, they can go to market, in, you know, in a year's time. No problem. So that is something that we need to continue to work towards and make sure that it becomes a part of our existence. And not just taking it and putting it on the shelf, but actually using it and sharing it and buying a second copy because
yes.
One is your real copy and one is the one that you use.
Yes.
And whenever you fall in love with books like that, recipes or whatever books you read in, when you're really, really into them, that's what you do. And that is what I want people to be able to do. One, that they can will to somebody. That's how important it is. And I want one next to the stove. Would get grease mark.
Would get marks. Would get
Johnny cake butter mark on it. The whole 9 yards.
Couple of dog ass with your best recipe. In
of course. Of course. I get one book now. If you see this book, more tie up and joke up and stab up in this book. And I even start using it yet. And it's just a recipe book. But it's done so well.
Yeah.
And it's received so much acclaim that I had to get it. And when I got it, I literally couldn't put it down for the whole day.
Mm.
And I skimmed through things, but this one I ain't skimmed through. I was literally there and I was like, okay, I got to learn this method. I got to do this. I got to do that. And that's what I want people to want to do in the Bahamas. Again, I'll say it without any hesitation. The Bahamas is an amazing place with amazing food culture, 110%. But it's just buried under layers of, you know, stuff.
Yes.
And people not understanding and misinterpreting it.
Right. Oh, man. All right. So, that was a whole lot. Now,
we could get to the topics now.
You know, like I didn't even get to start this thing yet.
That was the introduction.
That was one question. Oh, man. That was so interesting.
That was the introduction.
All right. Now, the question is in my mind is, how did you even get like this? So let's go back to your childhood. Like, you were brought up where? Where were you born? Exactly.
I was brought up in Nassau, yeah. Mainly in South Beach. My parents are, all our life we've lived in South Beach. Mm. My grandmother, grew up and lived for the most part. She lived in Rupert Ian Lane.
Ah.
And so I had best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Growing up, it was in Brighton. My dad is very, very well known throughout the region. Mm-hmm. He's a bishop and one of the smartest human beings I know. Mm-hmm. And so he always pushed us to understand and to comprehend, not just to learn.
Right.
And that goes to a deeper understanding of things, not just to read, not just to take it in, but to live it, to apply it,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to use it. And so when I became a culinarian, that was easily transferred from the first day till now. I was very, very fortunate, very, very fortunate. When I went to be an apprentice after coming from, because I went off to school. I used to go to COB for architecture. I realized that architecture wasn't my thing because it was too much about science.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to draw and I wanted to design, but I wasn't into the science. So forget about that. I wasn't into that. I then went off to University of Belmont in Nashville, where I was studying, understudy, and I was going to do, human development and counseling.
Hmm.
Because I like to interact with people. I spent most of my time, even though I was getting a 4.1 when I was in Belmont.
Mm-hmm.
I spent most of my time cooking for family and friends and restaurants. Not even charging nobody, you know, just cooking.
Yeah.
Just cooking for church people and all that different stuff. And so I decided, you know, this is truly what I love to do. And so I'm going to do it. At the time, it wasn't popular to be a chef in the early 90s. I started in 95. when I first came into school, it was in 92. 92, going to be a chef, your parents wasn't sending much people to school to be no chef.
No, sir.
What? That wasn't no thing. Like being a chef was considered a trade.
Yeah.
So after I did that, in 95, I went to BHCC, and it was there that I excelled.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated from BHCC. I did I did two programs. I did the apprenticeship program, and I did hospitality management. I was the first and only Bahamian to be selected to do a cross-training program in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach. I graduated from that program with a 4.35 GPA.
Mm.
And then I graduated from BHTC, Dean's List, Student of the Year, highest everything, most medals, most competition, most this, most that, everything. Every category that was offered at the school, I excelled in. And I also got awards for doing hospitality management. So I applied and have always applied. What my dad had instilled in us,
right,
was whatever you can do, do it to the best of your ability and do more.
Yes.
So I never look at cooking as just going to the store. And for me, it was always question everything. Understand. Mm-hmm. Comprehend. You know the students when you go to college, mainly. When you go to college, you know them students who always is keep class long, who always get questions?
Yeah.
That was me. That was me. But unapologetically so. To the point where I'll tell you could go because you dumb anyhow.
Yeah.
I would literally say that if anybody tried to get on me for prolonging the class, I'd like you all to go. I ain't come here to come to class.
Yeah.
I come here to learn. You know what I mean? So I was always that person. Always. Always, always, always. Always. And to this day, still. And so I truly feel as though it is now my responsibility with people after being in the industry for 25 years is to teach my colleagues, to assist and teach students coming up and everybody who would ask.
Right.
A lot of people are intimidated by my success, but people that know me know my success could be your success.
Let's get to that point because you mentioned a few things. One, because I find that a lot of persons, especially when they're trying to make a decision, we are all, this is the word that's being used now, multi-potentialites. Back in the day, we call them Renaissance men. In other words, we start with something, but we don't always stay there. Interest will come. The problem I find that persons having to make is making that decision, like how you made that decision. I like cooking. Now, I found that a lot of persons have this thing where they have like about two things, sometimes three. For some persons, that's very difficult having three. Where they're good at them, they all like them. How did you make the decision? Like you say, you want to do architecture, but because the science part of it, you're not into that. So now you went on to something else and you realize, you know, you're cross-training, doing some work. But there was a point that you were just cooking for free and realized, I really like this.
Right.
That part.
It wasn't an easy decision. And to be honest, I was scared to tell my parents because they had invested in me going to a year of university.
Yeah.
And also to start COB. So, you know, I was kind of timid about it, but at the same time, I had always done it with a way that they would look at me and you know what? Okay. This dude can do good. Right. Or this dude really connects to what he's doing. So let's see how this goes. So that was always a part of it. And here's the thing. One of the things that I learned when I went to do my interview with the Marriott team, sorry, not with the Marriott team, with the Radisson team.
Yeah.
Because fortunately, when I did my my apprenticeship interview, it's an interviewing process back then to get into the apprenticeship program. It was like about six major hotels came there and you had to interview with each one. And if you were lucky, maybe you got one or two that wanted you to come to their hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, me being myself, all six of them asked me to come to work to their hotel. It became a process of me interviewing the ones that I wanted to go to.
Yeah.
And when I went to Radisson, the lady said to me, well, what were you doing for the last 3 years? I said, well, I didn't put that because it doesn't apply. She said, you're absolutely wrong. She said, architecture is design and development. And as a chef, that's what you're going to do. Mm. She said, human, understanding the human anatomy, psychology, and wanting to be a counselor. My friend, that's what you can do here every day. As long as you're in hospitality, you can find that you're going to be a HR and an expert. You need to be an expert in people for you to work inside hospitality. So she said, they absolutely come. And from that, I realized that even though I had switched, all of that was a part of what I was becoming.
Right.
Fast forward to the day, I design restaurants for small, I design kitchens and layout restaurants for small businesses. Mm-hmm. So I still reading plans and developing this and doing all them different stuff. As a head chef, as an executive chef, you definitely is the HR manager of the kitchen. Yeah. So understanding and having that foundational training was very important. So it's not like those things were really separate. They were getting me ready for where I am today. That's all that is.
And you never look back to say, you know what? Maybe I should have tried something else. Or it's just like, once you and you all in, you burned your boats and you're like, I'm not turning back.
Never. I can tell you this. It always absolutely astounds me. For example, I think we graduated with like 34 apprentice chefs when I graduated class. Mm-hmm. And I think there are maybe 10 of us left in the industry. Me personally, I can tell you unequivocally, if I wasn't a chef, I would be a chef. if I wasn't a chef, I would be in some way, shape, or form. Like I said, I'm slowly coming away from the title chef because I do more food and beverage stuff.
Yeah.
So it'd be a food and beverage director. It'll be a hotel manager with emphasis on food and beverage. It'll be some way connected to hospitality and food and beverage, 110%.
Okay. Now, because now that brings up another point here. There is a saying, and I usually tell persons this when they come to me asking about business and stuff. I'm like, are you self-aware? And for most people hearing that word, they think technology, right? And you're artificial intelligence. What you mean? No. Are you self-aware? Do you know who you are? Do you know what you really want to do? Because you might be picking up a passing fad most times. People pick up these things that seem good at the time. But from so far, what you've been talking, you've been cooking from you was four. You grew up with that Grammy cooking. You grew up with understanding, like you say, the architectural part of it and putting design towards stuff. And you're able to apply all that to the point that when you felt that love for standing in front of a stove, creating memories, that's what I call them, especially when when you eat some good food, trust me, that's a memory. You create memories because that smell, the conversation, the location creates a memory when that person eats that food. And you made the decision to say, I love this. That is being self-aware, that you reach to the point that this is not passing. This is not something we're going to jump on now. Like you said, the 30-something people you graduated with, but only 10 left because the rest were not self-aware. It was a good thing at the time. Now, another part of this, because this is a two-parter, you had the support of your family.
Yeah.
Which is very important.
All my life.
And I find that
all my life.
People need to really understand that sometimes their children, you want the best for them. You want them to go to a good school and get a good education. But sometimes they have something within them that they know. Because I can tell you, even in my high school when I graduated, even persons I met in college, they were only there because their parents wanted them there. And like you mentioned, they just spent time there. They got the degree and now they're not doing nothing with that degree. They just wasted time and money because they were not self-aware. So I want you to think in your mind, okay, besides that point when you were cooking for free, when you were in university or college, where from when you was at 4 years old, to when you graduated and went off to college, was there anything in between there when it just clicked like, I want to do this? Like, this might be something I want to get into. Did it click anywhere in between there?
Nope. It was always in place. It was never something that I struggled with. In fact, I was a chef going to architect school, not an architect going to chef school. I was a chef going to architect school. I was a chef going to biology school. That's what it was. It was just a question of how.
Right.
It was just a question of where and why. And see, here's the thing that I have to, you know, applaud. And again, it comes from what we know as a family. Like you said earlier, I can't ever in my whole life remember my parents or my sisters telling me I can't do something. Right. Never. Because it was always do it the best way you can. See, one of the lessons I'll always remember my dad said. My dad once said, one day I was like, oh, I want to be like Michael Jordan. I want to make what he making and do what he doing. You know what my dad said?
Yeah.
My dad says to me, don't be like Michael Jordan. Be like the person who's pay Michael Jordan.
Yeah, there we go.
And that has stuck with me. I was a little boy when I said that. And that stuck to me years later. And that was always the philosophy of our house. Don't go there, but if somebody asks you what you want to be, when you go to an interview, when they ask you what you want to be, what you can say? And I go to an interview and I say, if somebody say, what you want to be, what is your goal? I ask them, what is your job? Mm-hmm. You say, I'm the executive chef. I say, well, I want your job. And I was taught that. You sit inside the GM office and the GM say, what's your goals? What's your job, sir? What's your title? I'm the general manager of the hotel. Well, I want your job.
Yeah.
In fact, I want your job only to learn what you learn, but I want your boss job.
Yeah.
And that's how I did interviews, especially when I was younger, fearlessly, because that's what I was taught. And so you put all that into perspective now. There was never a lapse because I never looked at culinary as just culinary. I never just wanted to be a cook. Never. Never. I'll never forget when I finished the apprenticeship program, the chef at the time had promised me that I would become a junior chef. Mm-hmm. When he decided, oh, you know, you're going to do this and do that. And you know what I did? I quit. The same day I quit. Because first of all, I said to him, there's no way I'm going to become the same thing as people who drop out of the program.
Yeah.
The same thing as people who ain't take the extra classes I have. The same thing as people who didn't do all the extra work I did. I say, now, I understand that I have to get experience and I have to learn. But I say, it ain't gonna be here. Because I gotta move on and I gotta move up and I gotta keep moving ahead. And I literally, you know what I did? I walked downtown, mm-hmm. Nassau. I walked to almost every restaurant downtown and see if anybody needed a cook. Mm-hmm. And that's how I end up working at some of my first jobs. When I worked on the cruise line, I was the only Bahamian working on the cruise line, Disney Cruise Line at the time. Right. You know how I got that job? I went to every travel agency in the Bahamas, got all the brochures. Don't forget, this was way before regular internet. This was
right.
Dial-up internet,
yeah.
Them kind of time. And I literally wrote, and I was able to email every single cruise liner that I applied that came to the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got on a cruise ship. And I worked on a cruise ship for 2.5 years. No other Bahamian. They say they could never even remember when a Bahamian applied.
Oh, wow.
When I left the cruise ship, I helped other people get onto the cruise ship. Because now when they heard my experiences, they wanted to do the same thing. And so I've been fortunate enough to be given the know-it-all and the strength to carve the road, and don't just carve the road and cover it back up, but you carve the road and leave it open for other people to come behind you.
Hmm. You know what I'm
and
hearing?
And I've been doing that all around.
What I'm hearing, because, again, from books, success leaves clues, right? And what
right.
you just described is the same thing I've heard over and over again from most successful people worldwide, not just in the United States. One, one thing I've noticed, the parents, in most cases, the parents give their child enough confidence to stand bullying in front of anyone. Like that right
100%.
There was one of the things that I found out about a lot of persons who became very wealthy and to the point who still are approachable. Like you could come to them and talk to them. There's a lot of persons who just had adversity, who had it bad, whatever. But ultimately, their parents drove them in a way whereas they gave them that confidence, first of all. Secondly,
yeah.
Becoming aware that I am who I am. And this is something that I find a lot of people don't really understand. Like, who are you? When I ask people, but who are you? They would tell me where they born and where they grew. No, who are you? In other words, what are you meant to do? There's something you are here for. It's like the statement, grass doesn't strain to grow. A dog doesn't try to meow and a cat doesn't try to bark. A cat will be a cat. A dog will be a dog. Grass will be grass. And you will be who you are. Like you said, you were a chef going to architectural school. You are a chef. Right. That's who you are. And until that awareness comes, and you have that confidence, ain't nothing there to stop you. There's nothing 100%. There to stop you. But if something is missing, you would struggle. I find people struggle.
Right.
Wow.
And one of the things is also very true. When you have that support, and when you have achieved the kind of achievements that I have, based on doing things, you know, untraditionally, you feel almost guilty if you don't share that with other people.
Right.
Because how dare I get so much support for myself? Mm-hmm. But then when somebody asks me for some help, I don't do nothing with them. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to be free. It doesn't mean that it's not going to challenge you to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But it is available.
Right.
You understand? And that's one of the things that we have to do more. And that's what makes you a storyteller as well. Mm-hmm. That's what makes somebody like you want to start a podcast.
Yeah.
Because now things like these are available for years and years to come.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to understand the importance of what it is that we do. So when people ask me, that's why I'm telling you I'm slowly morphing beyond what I would call a chef.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because being a chef means, okay, you manage food. It's mm-hmm. basically what a chef does. Mm-hmm. And I think we've gone long ahead of that because there's so much purpose to what it is I think that I am and could and should and will be doing in terms of culinary. Not just locally. You mm-hmm. believe it or not, I live in Hawaii. And I'm the same kind of advocate here in Hawaii as I am in the Bahamas.
Mm.
I live in Hawaii as an expat. And I push for them to have less expats. And to use more local and promote local. And to, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of things that, you know, again, that's why I say we can move away from that title of chef.
Okay. Good. Now, let's take that to the next level because I totally understand where you're coming from because I had the same epiphany with me with photography. When there's a point, you reach that state and you realize, okay, it's got to be more than this. I'm built for more than this. There has to be more. Right. How can I not duplicate, but spread my knowledge to the most persons? How can I reach more persons with what I do? Because this needs to get out. And from what you're saying, because now you're moving into the beverage and you're doing food and beverage managing type thing, you're writing books, you're telling your stories, you're getting this information out. Even so of helping persons, like you mentioned, it's there where I can help, you can help people, design their kitchen. You're now to that next level that I've only seen in a few behemoths who realize this point that, you know what? I'm moving from the technical skills of what I do from being a chef. From being a carpenter, from being a mason, to the point where, as you know what, I'm going to set up a system, not just for myself, but I'm going to leave breadcrumbs so everyone. It's like you said, pave the road and leave the road open. So the question to you on this section here, what do we as Bahamians need to do? Not just to reach the level that you are at right now, because that takes time to reach that point and experience.
Right.
But now I'm talking from a business aspect. What have you seen here at not just restaurants, but any business in the Bahamas, where are we lacking? What's going on over here? Where do we need to step our game up to reach that level of experience? Not just, let me offer you my product, let me offer you my service, but let me offer you a service. And not just to you, but something I can expand beyond the walls or the borders of the Bahamas. Where are we?
Right.
And what do we have to do to get there?
Well, you know, first of all, here's the thing. The talent is there.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I believe Bahamians are some of the most creative people in the world. And I've been many places and worked with many people. The talent is there. The creativity is there. Here's the thing that we don't do well, and that's put ourselves out there. Bahamians don't put themselves out there. We don't do a good job marketing who we are, what we offer, and what we can do. Somebody asked me maybe last week or the week before that. He said to me, because I was helping him, and he said to me, Chef, how you do all these things? How you learn all these things? I used to do all these things. I said, well, you know, I put myself out there. Mm-hmm. I offer myself on social media. From time to time, I'll tell people, if you need some help, I'm willing to offer free help. If you need this, contact me, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of people don't know who we are. They don't know what it is that we offer. And a lot of us operate in a vacuum. And we have to move beyond that. If you're somebody who's determined to share, you got to start sharing.
Yeah.
You got to start sharing to people who may not appreciate you or what you're sharing. Mm-hmm. But you have to go beyond that. There are some people who I give advice to, etc., that they think I'm crazy.
Why is that?
There's some people who would look at me and you know, not give me any props. But they'll give somebody who is not as learned as I am, not as experienced as I am. They'll give them props, especially if it's a non-Bahamian. But you have to keep continuing moving beyond that. And because if your end goal is to assist, you gotta assist. And people need to know that you do offer assistance. And all you have to do is do it one or two times, you know, because then you can have somebody who can echo the fact that you are a very approachable and a very experienced person. 110%. But you have to be willing to put yourself out there, whether it go good or bad, but you just gotta, you gotta do it.
So again, here's that confidence factor, because people are so afraid to put themselves out there. They don't have the confidence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Nobody follows a timid leader.
Right. Right.
People who have been given the gift of leadership, people who want to guide and direct others, right? You can't be timid. Nobody follows a timid leader. There's a level of push out your chestness in leadership.
Yes.
There's a level of saying, when people ask, who won't go first? You jump up and say, me, I won't go first. Because I won't crush all y'all to make y'all know that whatever y'all thought y'all was can present, it have to be 10 times better because my own way up here.
Yeah.
And you see what I'm saying? So now the followers now understand that the bar is going up. And so things have to change. But you have to be willing to do that. And Bahamians have a very, very skewed understanding of the word arrogance.
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying? They want you to lead, but they don't want you to be somebody who comes up and say, me first. But you have to. Because I'm not going to follow you if you're not. I'm not going to follow you if you don't seem prepared. I'm not going to follow you if you don't see, if you don't know what you're doing. And so those are the kind of things that are going to get us over these hurdles. Because again, you can't be afraid. What sense is learning or developing Instagram if you ain't ready to put it out there?
Right.
Miles Monroe said it the best. There are so many hopes and dreams. The place with the most hopes and dreams in the world is the graveyard.
Yep.
Because we have all these things, we have all this knowledge, we have all this possibility, but we don't say nothing. And then we also get mad at the person who does. Well, you know, sometimes they just gotta be mad.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Why they gotta do all that?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my people.
Exactly. But we have to move beyond that. And that's one of the things that I think, you know, as we move along and as we grow and we develop, we got to go beyond these things. You see some people, look at the people, for example, look at the people on social media. Mm-hmm. Look at the things that, you know, get a million followers and this and that. A lot of it don't have no depth. A lot of it don't transfer into true success and sustainability.
Right.
And, but, you know, you also have to look and use the good in that. You and I connected from social media.
Yeah. Yep.
So there's some good things to happen, but you got to be willing to put yourself out there. Am I the best chef in the Bahamas? Definitely not. Definitely not. Am I one of the most public chefs in the Bahamas? Certainly. Certainly.
You know, and that's
does that come with a cost? Big time. A personal cost, a financial cost, everything costs. I'll give you a quick story before I leave this one alone. Mm-hmm. I used to work at Solomon's Fresh Market.
Okay.
And you know where Solomon's Fresh Market is?
Yeah.
You know, Fresh Market was developed by a West Coast Whole Foods group.
Okay.
So the same people that developed Whole Foods developed Solomon's Fresh Market. Mm. The gentleman that came to open Fresh Market came from a Whole Foods. Richard Rivera. He came from Whole Foods. When I came to work at Solomon's Fresh Market and I asked him, where is this? Where is that? He said, Chef, I can be honest with you. You know, all of those things were supposed to be in this market, but because we couldn't find anybody who knew and understood it, we took it off the drawing board.
Wow.
It was supposed to have a pizza oven. It was supposed to have a smoker. It was supposed to have all the things that you see inside a Whole Foods.
Right.
Was supposed to be on the deli side, but they never developed it because they didn't find it. And I had just come back to the island. And you know, I got that job. You know, I get that job.
What's that?
Again. I walk in the Fresh Market. This was the one in Old Fort Bay. Mm-hmm. I walk in the Fresh Market. It was under construction. I was like, wow, I'd love to work to some place like this because I had heard it's supposed to be like Whole Foods.
Right.
I walked in there. Asked who was in charge, introduced myself, given my resume. 24 hours later, I was hired. And so you have to put yourself out there. The next point to that was, I was off one day. I was off from working. I was in there with somebody at the time. A lady walked up to me and she said, Chef, these people ain't know what they're doing in a butcher shop. Can you help me? I was like, I shopping.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I was with my now ex-wife or she was my fiance at the time, but I know I was with her.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, she was always a big supporter. Still is. Me and her dad cool. So she was like, go help her. That's you. Everybody around here know you can't shop in
these.
And so I literally gone behind, put on one of their aprons, and I helped. I literally had to come from behind there because I couldn't move. I was there for about an hour and a half. Because everybody knew me and it was like, we know you can help us. Mm-hmm. Because I was out there, very public, very into what it is. So it comes at a cost.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to do that for you to be able to help people. Because a lot of times people don't even know they need help.
That's another thing.
Till they see the right person who could help them. True story. 110%. I'll never forget that.
These people didn't know what they're doing. That sounds so Bahamian. You know what they're doing.
I tell you. And I shopping, you know.
So all of this.
I shopping, literally.
All of this sounds like one word, branding. So you've taken your time to brand yourself as, from what I'm hearing, the chef who's always done well, who's always been a chef, who's always studied not only food, but culture and how it melds itself together. And is willing to help. Is that, what is your brand? Is that your brand? Can you explain that?
That is my brand, actually. My brand is me. I go by my full name, and my brand is me. And just a little side note, that is also something that we need to be very careful of.
Okay.
Everybody in the Bahamas is a branding expert now. Every single body is a branding expert. I've never seen so much branding experts in all my life.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they get to somebody as branded as I am, they ain't even know what to do.
Right.
Because again, we need to be very careful with what's out there in the market.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are watching us. A lot of people are emulating us. And we need to be careful. So yes, branding is very important, but proper branding is very important.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? I'm not branding on a Bahamian level, branding on a global level.
Worldwide, exactly.
Of course. If you're teaching me to be branded as a Bahamian in the Bahamas, and me and your branding portfolio can't go nowhere further than Freeport, you ain't know what you're doing.
Something
you
wrong.
Ain't, no, no. And I see it all the time, and I sure you see it. And God help you with the Zoom. When you look on there, everybody title is a branding expert. And when you go on their website, the website look absolutely horrific. When you go to their portfolio, it look absolutely dismal.
Mm.
And everything else, how are you expert in something that you can't even do
yourself? Do yourself. Oh, yeah. That's like the mechanic who wanted to fix a car and he's not even driving a sensible car. His car's broken down.
So we need to be very careful on some of these things. But yes, branding is very important. But proper branding is very important. Global branding is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And exposure and experience to test that brand is very important.
Wow.
You can't just say you as a brand, but you use a brand to who? Who use the brand to? Who could say you use a brand?
Right.
Show me your portfolio. Show me what your brand has achieved, and then we could talk.
Mm-hmm.
Who recognize you, etc. I'll never forget one time when I was doing an event for Food Network, and I walk in the kitchen, and somebody tell me, "Hey, Chef Simeon." I was like, "What?
Oh,
you know me?" He said, "Yes, I mean, I Google you and I know you and I've been following you and all this other stuff."
Yeah.
And I'll give you a next example. This was hilarious. One time when I was on honeymoon, we were in San Francisco and we was going to this restaurant. Very, very famous chef in San Francisco, Food Network side, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went there, I was like, I told my ex-wife at the time, I say, "I know the chef in here, like, we cool." She's like, "Yeah, whatever." Cause she's a big foodie and she knows who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, "Yeah, whatever." And when we get inside, he say, "Hey, Bahamas." Before I could call his name, he say, "Hey, Bahamas."
Yeah.
She look at me and say, "Okay, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
You okay, you in that one." But that's what I'm trying to say. And again, I say it very humbly, but I say it very proudly.
Yeah.
Because you got to do it. We talk about networking all the time, you know, and we don't meet nobody to the network.
That's true. I can attest to that. That is true.
We don't meet nobody to these networking events we got. You still go around and you stand up and talk to the same dead people you know all your life. Bahamians don't invest in publicists and marketing personnel. They don't.
Look, yeah.
The first time I went to an event with my publicist, the people looked at me like I was retired.
Yeah.
But for about 2.5 years, I had a publicist. And I get into the point now where I interviewing new ones again.
See, this,
you understand me?
This is a point. Okay, because George, you like to talk business now. Watch this now. Again, talking about photography, I'm going to go from my point of view in photography. Years ago, I invested heavily in myself. I mean, thousands of dollars. I ain't talking no one, two, three now. I mean, thousands. So, and one of the courses was, I remember it because there was a few of them I took. They were like $1,200 for like one day. But this one in particular, and we sat down, the gentleman, he said, "You know what?" We sat down in a circle and we started talking about how to get your work publicized worldwide. And just like how you said, publicist, on the art side in photography, there's something called an art buyer. First time in my life ever hearing about an art buyer. I was like, what the hell is an art buyer? So me being the only person from the Bahamas and only foreigner, I had to raise my hand. I say, please, I know I'm from an island, but I need you to explain me what is an art buyer. So they decided to explain to me that this is a person who takes your work and presents it to other persons who want to buy it. So it's this guy, you've published this. It's like the go-between. And in fact, they would have jobs from other people who are looking for things. And they would say, oh, I have one of my clients who do this and one of my clients to do that. I'm like, these people really exist? And so one class, $1,200, never forgot it. And the amount of information I learned from that, because there's some other things he taught me. And I went home. I remember coming back home. And the next day when I came back home, I was online looking for an art buyer, looking for these other persons. Like, I need you to represent me. And that took everything to a level that I didn't even know exist. That, like, that was a whirl. It was like, people say talk about glass ceiling. It was like, no, this is a wood ceiling. I didn't even know anything was above this. I thought that was the ceiling. I thought it was the roof.
There you go.
But when that attic opened up, it's like, this is a whole new world there out here.
And here's the thing. That which you just said comes with sacrifice.
Yeah.
It comes with, for example, I did a major event one time where I was sleeping in my car.
Yeah.
I was never homeless, but I ain't had nothing. Mm-hmm. I did some events where I go in there and I couldn't even do the events with the other chefs was doing because I couldn't afford it.
Right.
But I was to the event and I got the experience and the exposure. And then fast forward to times where you were getting paid and also all your ticket and your accommodation and my publicist was all taken care of.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So it comes with the sacrifice what a lot of people can't handle.
Yeah.
When you was paying that $1,200, I bet you that wasn't no easy $1,200.
I was hurting. I was hurting. You okay were then.
When you're talking about publicists and this and that and all these other things that you have to invest in yourself to create a brand.
Yeah.
The branding experts that we have right now ain't they can't even be.
Right.
Or don't even want to be. Them kind of things, they straight up oodle and oodle days.
Mm.
When you treat yourself, you treat yourself, and I talking about a big treat is a Big Mac. You save up for 6 months to buy a Big Mac special for $6. Because you don't have it. But mind you, you out in the public, you creating this brand, you have all these things happening. But behind closed doors, my friend, tears and brokenness and everything else is synonymous with building a brand. So when people can't tell me about them kind of stories, you have no brand.
Yeah.
You might have, you know, some social media would look good, but you have no brand. If you can't say sacrifice and brand in the same sentence, you have no brand.
Not many people go through that. I'm realizing that.
No.
Because when I tell them my story about these things, these like I say, these sacrifices I did because I wanted to learn more. I wanted to take my craft and be on the stage with everyone else in the world. I wasn't even looking at the Bahamas for the commercial type work.
Exactly.
And that struggle behind there was so real because people would see you out and think, oh, yeah, you're doing fine. But inside, boy, I'm like, boy, you don't know I have my last dollar right now, buddy. But I'm still going on this trip.
My friend.
I could eat, but I couldn't learn this
thing. But guess what? You hear? I know, but listen to me. I'll tell you this. I went to do an event with a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to stay so far just so I could afford the hotel.
The hotel, yes.
I couldn't even tell him where I was staying.
Oh man.
I had a car that I had so much coupons for.
Mm-hmm.
It was maybe $8 a day. That's how much coupon I used to get that car rental. And I was staying in a hotel that I scored, be my witness. It was at least an hour away.
Yeah.
And you know why I get to the hotel? Because of the cost. It had free parking. It had free Wi-Fi.
And
it had free Continental.
There we go. You got to get that breakfast.
and snacks all day.
Yeah.
Like free, like the Continental stuff was out all day.
Yes.
That's how I qualified to go to that hotel because I couldn't afford it no other way.
Oh, Yeah,
I missed all opportunity, you know.
I know those stories. I had a few of them.
Exactly. So if you just sit down and talk to me about grind, you got to talk to me about sacrifice.
Yeah.
You got to talk to me about that building, those building pains. You got to talk to me about rejection. What? You got to talk to me about trying and failing. All of that got to be. If you don't have that story, please go sit somewhere with brand. You ain't got no brand.
Because I feel so many people think it just happens. It just, you know, you just pop up and it was there. But for the past 10 years, where were you, like you said, when you was doing these courses, when you was taking and sacrificing, where were you?
Exactly.
When, like you say, you're eating ramen noodles because, man, you just got to save up a few dollars for this thing. Where were you when your life almost getting turned off because you just sacrificed?
There
like,
you go.
Yeah, people don't see that. As much as I try to tell people, buddy, if you won't be into your struggle, You get one little rejection, and you're ready to shut down. Like, it's the same for you. The same for you.
Let me tell you a quick story before we move on to whatever else we can talk about now.
Yeah.
And again, I want to make sure, in context, people understand, and you understand, that I'm not saying this out of being conceited or arrogant. I'm saying this because this is fact.
Right.
When I came back home, I even forget where I was. I traveled and was working somewhere. I think that's when I was working between Abaco and Jupiter, Florida, with the Ritz-Carlton. When I came back home, I had been exposed to the ideas of food trucks and pop-ups. Mm-hmm. Right? This was relatively new. It wasn't happening nowhere in the Bahamas, and it was nothing. I came back home and I started on this branding process and I had these ideas, etc. I sent 142 letters to restaurants around Nassau asking them to allow me to do a pop-up in their restaurant, explaining it. It had links. It had all these different stuff. My resume, the whole nine yards. Very, very well done. You know what I mean? Hand delivered these letters. I think I asked one of my friends, I don't remember, one of my friends helped me to drop off some of it. 142 letters. The word pop-up was not even existent in the Bahamian vocabulary. It was not. 142 letters went out, and I'd say about 30 days later, you know how many people responded to my letter?
No more than five.
Zero.
What? Stop talking to
me. Zero. Zero. Fast forward some umpteen years later, and the word pop up all over the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Like everywhere else. Same thing with food trucks. I was going behind a food truck. Some of the issues is still happening today. Mm-hmm. But when I went for a food truck, do you know the zoning, the business license, the sanitation, and everybody else did not even know where to start.
Start with you.
To allow to do a food job. They didn't even know where to start.
Yes.
It is like, where does food truck can be?
Mm-hmm.
I say it can't be stationary. That's the point of a food truck.
Mm-hmm.
It can be moving around in different locations. Oh no, we can't do that. It's still a part of the struggle today with food trucks. But it's not nearly as bad.
Yeah.
My friend, I had to get a special lawyer and an accountant to help me to go through the process to even begin to start to talk about food trucks. Fast forward today, food trucks and food trailers all over the Bahamas.
Yeah.
But a lot of them would never know that that process, what we did initially, was paved the way for them to now be on the road.
Right.
The information that we had to give the agencies paved the way for them to be on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, don't forget, before that, the only place you would see a food van or food trailer or whatever, you would see it broke down on the side of the road with it off, the tires ain't there no more, and it on some
blocks. Yeah.
That's not a food truck. Mm-hmm. That's a restaurant.
Yep.
That's fixed there. Yeah, exactly. And I was like, no, this is not what a food truck is. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So again, you know, if you're going to do, if you're going to be doing the kind of things that I do and people like myself do, you got to be ready, buddy. You got to be ready because it ain't going to be easy.
You know what? My wife, she always tells me when I actually see certain things and I say, well, why don't people do this or why people don't do that? She's like, you realize people don't think like that, right? I said, what you talking about? It's like, it's obvious. But I'm still slowly trying to come to my, to terms that that is hard for people to think. What you're saying, to think that far ahead of the game, the average person, I don't know if it's just Bahamians or if it's worldwide, but it's so worldwide. Hard for them. So it's worldwide. They just can't think that that far. Wow. And they find that hard. Like, why is that? Why? What do you mean? It's like obvious.
You know, one of the things that I've learned, and this is a little side note, one of the things that I've learned, a lot of things that we blame and say is happening in the Bahamas or only in the Bahamas, that ain't go so.
Not worldwide.
It's happening. Yeah, 100%. Well, some of the things, some of the things would be sort of synonymous with countries that are still developing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
But some of it is just, that's people. That's just people. And you got to understand, if what you and I do, if what other people do was easy, everybody would do it.
Everybody would be doing it. There we go.
It's not. Some people, when I was an apprentice in culinary school, when I was an apprentice, they gave us a stipend. It was about $140-something. Then it was $160. And then I think the last year was like $180.
Right.
A lot of my colleagues took that money and some of them had to literally use it with their family. Some of them use it and save up to buy rims for their car. Some of them use it and buy clothes and shoes and all that. Me, I use it only for school.
Right.
And only for learning. Whether it was to eat at a restaurant or to take an extra course, or take a development class, or order some special culinary tools, or whatever it is, it was all a part of this class.
Right.
So everybody ain't gonna do it. Everybody ain't gonna do it. I'll never forget one time when I said to a lot of my colleagues, hey guys, I'm going to Thailand. There's an opportunity for us to go to Thailand. This is way before everybody was going to Asia. There's an opportunity for us to go to Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
I said, listen, if you save your Starbucks money for a year, you could go to Thailand. Only me and Jesus been to Thailand. Every excuse in the book, every reason in the book, good and bad reason came up and nobody else got it. I did it again at something else that I did. Nobody else signed up for it. Nobody. Only me and Jesus.
You know, that's
so... I always invite, I always try to encourage, but
yeah.
Again, it's not for everybody.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I remember the same, similar, well, not in travel. I remember it was a time, I really like business. I like to see how things work. And I was dabbling in the stock market over in the United States through some friends. It was illegal because you have to go to central bank. But anyway, and I heard of this little store popped up in Seattle that was making waves. You know what the name of that company was? Starbucks.
What's that?
Starbucks started. And it was catching on because I started watching the trends and I'm like, boy, when they started the franchise, I'm like, hold on, coffee can be addictive. People like this brand. They have so many different things. This is going to spread. I remember, I still have it. It's so weird. I was cleaning out some things and I was cleaning out some boxes in the house and I picked up the proposal that I had for a meeting. I called for six of my close friends. And I remember I had a printout for each one of them and I explained to them of this company known as Starbucks and why we should get the master license in the Caribbean. So I don't want a Starbucks company. I just want a master license because anyone who wants to open in the Caribbean would have to come to us. Okay. So I'm like, but we had the money at the time. Persons had the money. Persons were working. They just had a big lump sum. So I know we had the money if we put it together. And I remember two of them saying loudly and laughing, ain't nobody's drinking no coffee. I ain't going to ever work. I remember this. That hurt me so much. It hurt me so much because I knew my projections were correct. I'm like, boy, we need to jump on this now. The company is offering master license around the world. They didn't even leave America yet. You hear me? They wasn't even down in Florida below the southern states yet. They were still up in Seattle, up in the northern. They didn't reach down. That's how far ahead I saw that this was coming.
Y'all would have been gazillionaires.
Exactly my point. And to this day, every time they see me, they say, boy, remember when I say, don't talk to me. Don't talk to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I tried my best to raise that money, but I just couldn't get it. You know, the banks wasn't helping all that crap. But that...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's some people, like you say, it's just people just can't see. They don't see. I don't know if it's that they... I don't see why they would not have trust me. I don't see why people wouldn't have trust you on your word until you say certain things. It's just, again, I don't want to say it's just behavior. It's just people. People are people, you know? Yep. Sometimes we just got to look for the right set. Jeez. But, exactly. Jeff, so what's next for you? So we know, understand, you're moving out of the term chef. And you're going into more dealing right. with beverages, and you're more dealing with, I would say, it seems...
Hospitality.
As if, hospitality. Right, good. That's a good way to say it. Hospitality. So you're moving more into that. You have books in your mind and you're working on one. And trust me, I'm going to be waiting right. looking to see when I come out. But what else right. do you have on your agenda moving forward?
Well, you know, Corona has been a challenge for everybody. So looking as far as humanly possible around and beyond Corona, I'm just going to definitely be focusing on one, my book. Mm-hmm. Two, a pilot for a TV show that I want to get going. Three, I'm going to possibly be looking at some online courses and training.
Awesome.
So that people can get the development that they need. That's something that I'm working in conjunction with some people in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. The cookbook obviously is something that's front and foremost. I don't know if I said that. And then my event Ignite that we started last year.
Right.
We're going to bring back on stream and make sure that becomes the brand that we want that to build into. Mm. And so those are the main things that we're working on. I don't know where I'm going to be. I don't know where I'm going to be working or not working. I don't know if I got a hustle on the streets, but again, if it means me selling hot dogs, I can sell some really good hot dogs on the road and they can be amazing. So all of that can be a part of it.
Yeah.
So it's not over. It's just being redefined.
Right.
So I said in another Zoom we had 2 weeks ago, you know, it's time for us all just to reset.
Yeah.
So even as I reset, it's just to relook and reimagine a lot of the things that I had on the drawing board. The one constant has definitely been the book and the cooking show and the event.
Right.
So those are still definitely a part of it. And, you know, the ideas, and I've stayed in touch with most of the chefs. Everybody is excited. We're going to have some new faces. We're going to have some other people return, etc. But again, you know, that's going to take some time and definitely a very, very courageous mm-hmm. budget.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at that and looking to do it very well and to just continue to make that grow and to be a part in a very, you know, recognized event for the region. That's what I'm working on.
I wouldn't say that's a lot because I understand how your mind works now. And it's sort of like how I like to do. I like to set some goals that's way beyond where I think I can do and just work towards it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So that's really awesome.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this one question. Something just popped into my mind. And I'm sure for other persons who might listen, one word, financing. If I want to open a restaurant, if I'm starting a business, whatever it is, how do you, what's your suggestions? What is your advice on getting financing? Should you bootstrap it? Should you, like something I did before, I went for consumer loan, just to open a business, then pay the loan off? Or is there other means of financing? What do you have in mind?
Well, the first thing I'll say to you is don't do it. That's the first thing I'll say. But by saying don't do it, I want to make sure that you or anybody explores all of it. Mm-hmm. You understand? Understanding the market, understanding your audience, understanding your labor pool, understanding the cost, and understanding projections.
Right.
Once you get over that, and you say, okay, I still in. The most difficult thing in the Bahamas now, again, is something that you and I and similar persons will have to overcome. Is unfortunately a lot of people who don't have no money is except with the good ideas.
Yeah.
And I said who do have the money, well, anyway, no comment on that. And also too, it's still very much even though, you know, I listened to the Prime Minister last address, I think on Monday.
Yeah.
And he started to talk about it, which is the importance of small businesses.
Yes.
The granting of not loans, but grants.
Grants, yeah, for smaller business and micro business.
Stuff like that. That's very, very important. 5 years ago, you wouldn't even been talking to that.
Exactly.
I went to the Bahamas Development Bank one time and I think I went there. I think I was more broke when I left than when I gone there.
Wow.
So again, you know, we need to definitely have some more emphasis on small businesses. It's easier for you to get a vacation loan than it is for you to invest in a business.
Yes, it is.
Rightfully so because of the failing and all of that. But again, there's some success stories, many success stories in the Bahamas, mm-hmm. that should actually be more successful and pave the way for other businesses to come on stream.
Mm-hmm.
I'm exploring the possibility and I asked myself that question. I'm right now considering everything from toughing it out myself and doing something really small, looking at angel investors, mm-hmm. looking at a group of local investors, mm-hmm. and also doing a FundMe page.
Yes.
You know, those have now opened up to different countries, etc. So there's a possibility that you could do different FundMe pages. Yeah. Will it work? I have no idea. But, you know, these are uncharted waters, and I'll say it's definitely not easy. But one of the things that I'd say is just be prepared. You got to be prepared. You got to have your ideas. You got to have stuff ready to go. You got to have your concepts ready to rock and roll. I always think about it as a parent on a Shark Tank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you look at that series, they ask you almost all of the questions that you will need to know.
Yes.
And so if that's something that you're serious about, watch a series, a episode of it, a couple episodes, whether it's food or not or whatever it is. Take some notes, understand what it is that they will ask you for, and be prepared to answer those questions in your situation. Even if you funding it, even if you've been saving up for the last 30 years, you still need to make the business decision. And you got to remember, 70%+ food and beverage businesses fail.
Mm.
So because of that, that's where the reluctance come up. However, when they are successful, that 30%, oh boy, that 30%, generation on generation.
Yeah.
You understand me? So you could hit or miss, but when you hit, you hit good sometimes. And that shows. When I was doing some research for a spot, as a partner in a restaurant business, and we were initially being asked to be a restaurant by the mall. Cause you know, our mall, our town center, not town center,
Marathon
Mall, for example, it was developed on the mall scale, the global mall scale, even though it's a single level, it was still developed as a global mall. And one of the things that they wanted was in mall and out mall restaurants. That's something that they were pushing for. They actually have locations. I don't know if they still have it because it seems to be not even happening right now, for the exception of the fast food places. But they wanted restaurants around the mall to be a part of the draw to the mall.
Yeah.
That's where you got the Outback and everything else. You see, it's developed like that.
Yeah.
Every mall you go to has food services around and in the mall, right? So I say that to say, in my research, the number 10 fastest Wendy's in the world was the Marathon Mall, and the number one grossing revenue for the Wendy's brand was at the mall. During that period that we were examining, and they were enticing us to come to that location, we discovered those signs of facts. So it ain't like it ain't success. There's no success to be had in the food service business in the Bahamas. It's not like the money don't spend.
Right.
It's there. But it's just that, one, we need to continue to develop concepts that will allure people to our brand and locations and stuff like that.
Right.
Because I think the food scene in the Bahamas is becoming kind of dreary and stale now.
Too much of the same things, man, over and over again.
Too much of the same thing, especially for the non-hotel restaurants. Hotel restaurants are notorious for being innovative and stuff because they have money behind them.
Right.
But hotel restaurants usually are very hotel-y.
Yes.
Standalone restaurants are where you can really, really shine and do a lot. But that's not been something that people have really invested into. And the Bahamas needs to also spread out. All the restaurants in the same area. You know what I mean? Whereas persons like Wendy's and the franchises, for example, realize that the fastest growing and the most diverse area of all the Bahamas is Carmichael Road.
Yep, City 2000. Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? So why we ain't developing that area more?
Yeah.
Why aren't there different types of restaurants on the Carmichael Strip, et cetera, et cetera? So, you know, all of that is stuff that, again, do your homework and understand before you get into the restaurant scene.
Words of wisdom. This is so awesome. So where can our guests, if they want to talk to you about anything, or where can they contact you? What's your website? What's your email, your handles on social media? Where can people find you and follow you or whatever?
The best thing to do is go to my website, www.simeonhalljr.com, and all of my links, my contact sheet, everything is there, right on the website. So once you do that, you 100% do it. Could find me.
So he's easy to find, ladies and gentlemen. That's Simeon Hall Jr. I don't even want to call him chef anymore because now hospitality maker. That's something word I could use, I guess, for the next phase. Man, I'm really excited. I'm really glad that I was able to get you on this podcast. We've talked about a whole lot. And I'm still, my mind is still blown by the whole food culture thing. Now I have a lot of work to do myself.
Awesome. I will
definitely be looking out for that book. So when you post, of course, I know you're going to post it. So I know once it's posted.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll definitely be able to find that because there's a lot inside that I need for to sure. know. I need to hear about that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to what you're going to
do. And I don't know if you've seen it, but you definitely can take a look on my Instagram. I'm sure it's, and I'll probably repost it again.
Okay.
But I have the cover of the book already as well.
What's the cover? Because I think I might have slide past it. What's the picture?
The cover is the hands holding fish. So you remember now, back in the day, the fish man used to come on the bicycle and sell fish.
Yeah.
Fish man.
Fish.
So we have a model, Mr. Miller was 94 at the time. So we have some 94-year-old hands.
Yep, but that's
with, nice. String snapper.
Yes.
because, again, there's nothing more telling than hands.
I know.
And those hands, 94-year-old hands, you know, they get some stories on them.
Exactly.
And so Mr. Miller was very, very gracious to do that for us. We pushed him to the max. He was such a trooper, 94 years old, and he was out there modeling.
Yes.
So that was amazing. That was absolutely amazing. And so I really appreciate that. And the book cover is ready. The title is ready. It's going to be revealed, and everything else is ready to rock and roll. And I'm just very excited.
Again, this is Bahamians doing big things. You don't have to stay in Nassau to do big things. You can do it around the world. That's what we do. That's what Bahamians do. We're very, what's the word I want to use? We're very resourceful people. And I find that we have a lot of ideas. So ideas are always flowing. The whole idea, from what I learned from the day, you have to have that courage, that confidence to go out and put yourself out there and just make your dreams happen, because no one else is going to do it for you. You know?
Awesome.
So, thanks again for coming on the podcast. I'd like to thank all my listeners right now here on BroadUpSea.com. Just keep in mind that we are also sponsored by Bahamas Candle and Soap here on BroadUpSea.com. Look forward to new guests coming on to different shows. We also have other shows that's here on the website. And we are now on Stitcher. We just got approved for SoundCloud. We've had persons asking about that. So we're now on SoundCloud, and we'll be pushing most of the podcasts on that platform as well. We're also on Anchor and Google Podcasts as well. So you can listen to us on your phone whilst you're jogging in your car, wherever you are. Again, Simeon Hall, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I really think as time go on, I'm going to call you back, because there's some things I think I want to talk more about, and more about the because I don't know, I'm so interested in this food culture thing right now, about cooking and so much.
A part two already.
Yes.
All right. So yes. It's a part two. No problem.
There'll be a part
two. We'll do a part two.
That is warranted a whole conversation altogether, because the amount of travels I've done through the islands, I'm sure you could explain why certain things are the way they are, because my mind is just racing right now. All right. So thank you again for coming on. And again, I guess we're going to have another part.
My pleasure.
Awesome.
Talking food is a very serious thing. Talking food is a crying shame. Talking food, it will taste your blood. For talking food will leave you lying in the mud. Harry talking food, shame in the game in the hand. He breaks you to bush crying.